This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Look, we do have some breaking news for you. You may not know this, but there is a royal wedding going on this Saturday night, Australian time. Prince Harry, you may have heard of him, will marry Meghan Markle at St George's Chapel in Windsor Castle in front of 600 invited guests, a few thousand in the surrounding area there, and a broadcast audience estimated in, well, quite possibly the billions. And whether you're a monarchist or a republican, there is plenty of reasons, or there are plenty of reasons, to tune into the ceremony. For the diehard monarchists, the impending nuptials are an opportunity to reinvent the royal family for modern times. Welcoming a young, biracial, divorced American actress into the Windsors might shake up the conservative, traditionalist image of the British monarchy. And even for those royal agnostics and republicans, there's fashion, there's celebrity spotting, and if the gossipy tabloids are to be believed, plenty of family drama. It is 2 days away. A royal wedding is 2 days away, and we still don't know who will walk the bride down the aisle. So, what do you need to know in the lead-up to tomorrow's, well, Saturday night's ceremony? What are the interesting details and wrinkles that casual observers might not notice? This morning, our talking point is about the royal wedding and any other royal wedding you might want to talk about. You will find out, hopefully, everything you've ever wanted to know about royal weddings and about tomorrow's ceremony as, well, not tomorrow, it's... Well, it is tomorrow. Today's Friday morning. It's Saturday night. It's a long way away. It's tomorrow night. Now, we're going to look at this from a different point of view, perhaps. Lisa Ryan is a senior writer for The Cut and is the co-host of the podcast Royally Obsessed. And this may come as a shock to you. She's American. Lisa, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm okay. I'm keeping a lid on my excitement. But are you excited about this wedding?
I am excited, but I'm also excited that it's Friday morning where you are because it's Thursday afternoon where I am. So it's like I'm speaking in the future.
I don't even know. Exactly right. You're actually talking in two different time zones. So when will the wedding be in America then? For us, it's perfect. It's like either 7 o'clock or 9 o'clock, depending on which side of the country you're on. Or 8:30 if you're in the middle. So that's perfect. On a Saturday night, you can get a pizza and a couple of beers and watch the wedding.
Oh, my gosh. You guys are so lucky. So I'm based in New York, and for me, I'm going to have to wake up at 4 or 5 in the morning on Saturday because I'm going to be covering it for New York Magazine. And it starts around, I think, 7 a.m. here. So I believe the royals are going to start arriving around 6 a.m.
Wow.
So a lot of people are going to be just, like, drunk really early, basically, in America.
So the worst place to watch it probably is the West Coast. It's going to be about 4 in the morning there.
Yeah, so I think people are just going to have all-nighters. I've had some people tweet at me that they're going to have sleepovers, and I can't even imagine. Like, I'm already dreading waking up early on Saturday, but then I'm also excited to cover this event that I've been covering nonstop for weeks.
So when you say you're going to be writing about it for New York Magazine, you're going to be live blogging what's going on?
Yeah, live tweeting. I'll be tweeting. I'm not as good on Twitter, but I'm going to try to make a concerted effort. But I will definitely be blogging it for The Cut with Amanda Arnold. So we're going to have at least two bloggers on. We're going to have social media people. So a lot of New York Magazine staffers are going to be up very, very early on Saturday.
We know that Americans look at the royals with a kind of a wary eye. You got rid of them a couple of hundred years ago. We kept them.
Mm-hmm.
Is there still this kind of feeling of, if only we'd kept them? Or are you quite happy to have them at arm's length?
I think in general we're happy to have them at arm's length. I think that there's a bit of wariness now because of the current political climate in the U.S. where I think some people are just like, if only anything could be different than what's happening right now. But in general, I think we're quite pleased to have what is supposed to be a democracy, So that's
well, the English
kind of
have got a democracy as well, you know. They just managed to keep the royal family. Now, you're marrying into it. Now, this, I suppose, shows how things have changed. And it's a long time ago. It's, you know, 80-odd years, or nearly 80 years since Edward VIII had to give up his throne because they didn't want him to marry an American divorcee. And that's who Prince Harry is marrying. He's marrying an American divorcee. Is that a problem, do you think, these days?
I don't think it's a problem these days at all. I think that it shouldn't have been a problem back then, but I don't know. I think divorce has just become a lot more common in general, which I think is probably, in a way, nice that you're not stuck in a marriage that perhaps you don't want to be stuck in. But I think it shows that at least the monarchy is evolving. I don't know if it's because they want to evolve or because they know that they have to evolve. But if, you know, Harry had fallen in love with a biracial American divorcee actress and wasn't permitted to marry her and had to leave the family, that would have been such horrible press. And I don't know how they would have recovered from that.
I suppose you've got to look at the fact that the Queen has four children and three of them are divorced, you know, and two of them will be bringing their second wife or, husband to the wedding. So, you know, if it's good enough for them, it should be good enough for Harry.
Yeah, and, you know, if Charles had been allowed to marry the woman he loved, then we wouldn't have had Princess Diana, and I grew up thinking she was so wonderful, so I'm glad that I had her. But at the same time, a lot of the dramatics that both he and Diana had to go through wouldn't have happened because he would have potentially been in a loving marriage from the get-go.
Maybe, although I think Camilla was probably married to somebody else at that point.
Yeah. There's a lot of problems there, but, like, they loved each other before that, I think. Although, I can't really keep their drama straight because their whole thing is completely dramatic, which is fitting because everything going on with Meghan's family right now is dramatic. So I think these people are just fairly dramatic.
Let's get straight to that because that is the big story. Who would have thought that 2 days out from a royal wedding, we would not know who would be taking the bride down or up the aisle? I don't know which way it is. What do you think? I mean, will it be her mother? They say that's not unprecedented because Queen Victoria actually accompanied one of her daughters to the altar back in the 1800s. What's going to happen, do you think?
I think it would be quite nice if it was her mother. First of all, she's always been really close with her mother, and it would be a really nice touch to say, like, thank you, Mom, for being so wonderful, and you can walk me down the aisle. But then on top of that, her mother is a Black American woman, and I think that that would be quite a remarkable thing to have incorporated into this wedding and to have her escort Meghan down the aisle. I just think that would be quite meaningful. But I am seeing people say that maybe Prince Charles will be the one to escort her, as he's escorted a friend's daughter in the past, but maybe she'll walk by herself. I've seen some people say, you know, Meghan's actually like a woman. She's 36. She's lived a life before this, and so she is independent, and she can walk herself down. But I personally would be rooting for her mother because I just think that would be really touching.
So the idea really is, I understand it if it is, you know, hundreds of years ago when the father did literally give his daughter's hand or give his daughter away to somebody else. The idea that it still goes on today is a lovely tradition, but it's not... it's not like the way that it was. There is no reason, as you say, she could walk down the aisle by herself. There's no reason for anyone to have to give her away.
Yeah, like she's not being given away. It would be touching just because it would mean a lot for her mom to be the one, but Meghan can handle herself. Meghan can certainly walk down that aisle all by herself.
So we know that Meghan has a bit of a past. She's been married before. She's an actress. What about Harry then? Because there's all sorts of stories about Harry being a real lad. He was in the army, of course. There were stories about the way he used to carry on at nightclubs. He's a good-looking bloke, and I'm sure there are only too many women who are, you know, only too happy to go out with him. What do we know about Harry? What do you think of him?
So I like Harry. I've liked him since I was young, just because he seems like he's just always himself. He's always been a bit of a rascal, always having fun, serious when necessary, but just kind of living his life. But a lot of people do seem to forget that fairly recently he was what could only be described as a party boy. Like, there are all these images that were published in the Daily Mail and even in, like, tabloids in Australia, all across the world, of him in Las Vegas having an extremely wild weekend that I don't want to
come on.
Stay on it.
We'd call it a bucks night, really, you know. or a bachelor, that's like a bachelor party. I mean, but okay. He just had it a few years early, that's all.
Yeah, he, you know, he was photographed nude with ladies. He was, like, in the pool. He was, like, racing with Ryan Lochte, the swimmer, you know. And he also had those issues where he wore that Nazi costume to a costume party, which was incredibly inappropriate. And, like, so I like Harry, but I can't say that he's perfect. Like, he's flawed, and he's made a lot of really dumb decisions as someone in the spotlight. But I feel like he's kind of owned some of his mistakes. Like, you really can't forgive the Nazi costume. Like, that's insane. Mm. But
he served in the army. I mean, or in the military.
Yeah.
You know, this is, he put his life on the line for his country, much as his brother has, his father and his uncle as well. I mean, Prince Andrew fought in the Falklands War, and Prince Harry fought in the front line in Afghanistan. So, I mean, I suppose they were trying to prove themselves. Well, they couldn't slide through life and not do anything.
Of course, yeah. He was in the military for a while, and he was really passionate about it, and he talked about how it was unfortunate that his title meant he couldn't do everything that he wanted there. He wasn't able to fight the way he wanted to, or, like, join his, brothers in arms. And,
sure.
You know, like, so that, I get that. And he's also done a lot of really great humanitarian work. Like, when you watch even videos of him speaking with underprivileged people, you can see he cares. He really has that aspect of Diana in him where he really connects with people. I've never met him. I would love to meet him. Like, Harry, if you're listening, let's hang out. But he really has this way of seeming to put people at ease and make them feel like they're the most important person in the world and they're in the room and they're very heard, and he cares. Like, he genuinely cares. So he's made a lot of mistakes, like a lot, but I think he's, at the end of the day, like, a good person.
And the work he's done for those who were injured in battle as well, disabled soldiers with the Invictus Games, which is coming to Australia later this year, and the Walking Wounded program as well. I mean, that shows, I mean, he knows, he was there. Some of his colleagues or his brothers in arms would have been killed or injured in battle, and he knows that. He is actually doing something about it. He could just come back and, again, continue his party ways, but he grew up, I suppose.
Yeah, you know, he's done really great things, and I'm glad you mentioned Invictus Games. I think that's really phenomenal that he's raised so much awareness about, you know, the difficulties that veterans go through when they return home, and he's given them this wonderful outlet, and I think that's a big deal. And it also has, like, unified the world about this issue, because I'm originally from Toronto, although I've lived in the U.S. for a while, and the last one was just in Toronto, and that was so nice to see the whole city embrace this event, and I know it's going to be in Australia next, and I just think that's wonderful.
Yeah, I think, and the ABC Radio will be doing a lot of coverage, and ABC Television as well, of the Invictus Games. Lisa Ryan is our guest. We'll take some calls in just a moment about the royal wedding. But what about royal weddings in general? What's the first one you can remember?
Well, I mean, dare I ask
whether you're old enough to remember Charles and Di?
I was not alive yet. I am 31, so I was around that time, but not quite yet. But I remember Diana's funeral very, very well. I remember watching it and crying and feeling very sad as a young girl. But I guess the first really big one that I remember is the William and Kate one in 2011. So it wasn't that long ago, but
no.
I was an adult to experience it, and it was fun. You know, I woke up really early then again, because I think it was maybe an hour later than this one or something like that. I still had to wake up super early for it. But it was really fun to see everything in the press, and everyone wanted to know what she was going to wear, what her family was doing. And so I feel like the excitement around it right now with the Meghan Markle wedding, it's kind of a little bit more in the U.S. than last time around, just because we do have, you know, an American marrying into the family. But we were excited last time too.
I think there's more hype about this one. As someone texted in earlier, the only thing they can remember about Prince William's wedding was Pippa Middleton's bottom, you know, and the outfit she wore. No one can really remember too much except that, you know, Kate Middleton the Duchess these days, her wedding dress was very reminiscent of Grace Kelly's 1956 wedding dress, which is known as the wedding dress of the century. So the fact that we can barely remember too much about that wedding tells us a little bit about it. I mean, the thing everyone remembers about Charles and Di's wedding was the fact that she got his names wrong and he got something wrong as well. And then later on we found out that she's walking down the aisle and looking for Camilla in the crowd and then saw her, and that must have been devastating for her as well. And then the sexless kiss on the balcony. It's like we should have known. Yeah. We should have known at the time.
Completely. And she was also so young, and that's so insane to me that this incredibly young girl had to marry into the royal family. I think 750 million people around the world were watching, and by young, I mean she was 19. She wasn't like a child, but that to me is a child. That's very
young. She was 20, I think. They waited until she turned 20 before they got married. So then if the big one that you can remember is Prince William, why are you so interested in them? Missed all the great ones.
Okay, well, as I said, I grew up in Canada, and so, you know, the Queen was on my money growing up. It's not on it. She's not on it anymore, but, like, I knew the words to God Save the Queen. I grew up around, like, the whole royal phenomenon, but a lot of my friends here in New York are American, and they grew up around it, too. It's just, it's very different here than it is abroad. Like, for us in the U.S., it's not like the royals actually have an impact on our day-to-day lives. Like, we don't, you know, we don't give them money. They're just kind of like this aspirational, fancy, glamorous family. And they feel like they're, you know, kind of our own in a way, just because we know so much about what's going on in their lives. But we look at it with this fascination that we can't really relate to. And it's kind of fun and gossipy. But that's, again, because it doesn't actually affect our lives. And so I know that people who are in the UK and presumably Australia have like different perceptions of it. But for us, it's just like the ultimate glamour.
Well, Australia, of course, has a little link with Denmark. You know, we had a great royal wedding when Princess Mary Donaldson, as she was, from Tasmania, married Prince Frederick. They met in a bar in Sydney during the Olympics in 2000, and that really told a story. The wonderful story there is that you could go into a bar and meet the Crown Prince of a European royal house, and that gave...
Excuse me as I go to a bar.
That's right. That gave hope to a lot of young Australian girls. And that wedding was a fabulous one, but I'm guessing it didn't get a lot of traction in the US.
No, not at all. I follow a lot of gossip blogs that, of course, talk about the royals, so I'm familiar with Princess Mary, but I think a lot of people in the US aren't. They don't really know much about the other royal houses. I've had people ask me, like, are there other royals in Europe? And I'm like, yes. There's like everywhere.
Yeah, well, Netherlands, Belgium, Norway.
In Spain, there was recently a bunch of publicity, or I guess just press, around this perceived fight that the queen and then the queen mother had, and like at a church somewhere, they kind of like had a little moment where the queen mother was putting her arm around one of her granddaughters, and then the other one kind of like swiped the girl away, and I wrote about it, and it did really well for us here because people were just like, ooh, queen drama.
All right, let's talk to a couple of people. Barry is first. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning. Your guest has just prompted me to remember when Di had a dance on the dance floor with, I think, John Travolta.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a big deal?
Was that the White House?
Yes, that's right. And I thought, well, that is just so, you know, bringing America, England together, you know, sort of the...
Well, if you're going to dance, it might as well with John Travolta. He knows how to...
Saturday Night Fever.
That's right. Knows how to dance, doesn't he? Yeah. Could have done the dance from
Pulp Fiction. She was, you know, over the moon. You could tell on her face. I remember, you know, just remember the image on her face, you know, when she was, you know, that we saw anyway.
About the Charles and Di wedding, Barry?
Yes, well, I was in Sydney then. I'm Brisbane now, but I was staying, of all places, in 70 Phillip Street, which was the University and Schools Club. I'd just come up from Melbourne and I had nowhere to stay, so I was staying there. And they had a royal wedding party.
Of course.
And they had the flags and they had the pictures on the walls, and we had pork pies with egg in them.
Oh no!
Yes,
cold ones.
Cold and warm, you could choose.
I think it was early. I think it was 8 o'clock at night too, rather than 9 o'clock.
Yeah, but we were going all day. I mean, there was Guinness and Newcastle Brown Ale, and there was John Smith's beer, and there was Mum's Champagne, that sort of thing.
Wow.
And everybody was in, and everybody had to be dressed up and everything. And it was very exciting.
And it was a Thursday too, wasn't it? It was not on the weekend,
as I
recall.
Yeah, no, it wasn't the weekend, no. But I was going to say that I think this one, at least for the Americans, your guest might say me wrong, there's more of a build-up, I think, here, at least in America, because I see today that CNN's going to be having it on all day. Can you imagine that? Live all day on CNN? That's just... it's usually all about the White House, isn't it?
All righty. Hey, thanks very much for that, Barry. So
are
they going
Barry.
Too over the top, Lisa, with all-day coverage? I mean, as it is, we've got 6 or 7 hour coverage.
That's just kind of how the news coverage is right now. Like, anytime Trump says something, it's on all day. I mean, that's also, things have changed. I know that I wasn't around for Di's wedding, but with Kate and William, we didn't have, people weren't on Twitter all the time. People had Facebook, but I don't think it was even, as huge as it is now. We're all just more interconnected, and there's this 24-hour news scape in the U.S., and so I think it makes perfect sense that it's going to be on all day, because, what else are they going to do? Have, a panel talking about something else Trump said? It's kind of, it's a wonderful break from the usual horrible news.
Campbell, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Rod. How are you?
I'm very well, mate. You want to talk also about Charles and Di's wedding?
Oh, it's hard to overstate, as you said, how big it was. We were in Tennant Creek in 1981, and I can't tell you how rough Tennant Creek was in 1981.
Now, just for Lisa's benefit, that is Outback Australia. That is quintessentially Outback Australia. In the middle,
sounds like a nice neighborhood.
In the Northern Territory. What, did they festoon the streets with flags and everything, Campbell?
Nah, well, we wouldn't know, mate. We were pretty young, and we were on a trip around Australia in a caravan. We'd just come from Ayers Rock, and it was really only a couple of months after the Chamberlain Affair, so that was quite a big thing at the time. Actually, it wasn't that big then.
Oh, it was pretty big.
But it became big later on. I can just remember my mum saying to my father, I don't care where we are in Australia, but we are going to be in front of a TV for that wedding. And I still remember there was a bit of steel in her voice, and Dad knew we had to book a motel that night. And this was a pretty rough and ready motel, but everyone was allowed to stay up, and my youngest brother would have been only 8 or 9, and I was 14. And the family still have a grainy old photo taken with the old SLR of the TV, across the motel room and, three or four beds. And,
wow.
And it was a big, big deal. And, it's huge. And I'm not saying we're not monarchists at all, but it was a big deal.
What about the pub in Tennant Creek? Do you think they had it on the TV in the corner?
I'll tell you this. It was a really divided town at the time. The laws around alcohol, even as a young boy, I could see my dad had to go to the back door and get permission to get alcohol just to buy a bottle of wine for mum and dad to have that night. It was, she was a pretty rough old town. But to all make right. a full circle, I ended up being in London for Princess Di's funeral, and you just, again, can't overstate how big it was. I was right outside the chapel for the
really
as the coffin entered.
How did you manage to get that close?
Well, funny enough, I'd been at an all-night party with my brother, and we decided we knew what was on, and they put trains start again early. We were coming home from a party about 6 a.m. and we said let's go and go to an early breakfast. Cafes stayed open to serve people. We went and had a nice early breakfast, and we got front position. Not front, but very, very close to the chapel as it was wheeled in. And, we just hung out and just decided to stick it out. It was a really big thing. And the emotion was just, you can't overstate it.
Right, Campbell, thank you very, very much.
Well, thank you
talk
so
about
much.
Vivid memories of being in Outback Australia. Now, in those days, there were, in 81, only four or five, really, there was a fifth TV network, but really four main ones, four commercial networks in the ABC, which is non-commercial. And, of course, every one of them screened the wedding. I don't think SBS did. I think they probably had something else on. But, yeah, you couldn't escape it. Of course, if you want to watch TV that night, you had to watch Charles and Di's wedding, which was the, probably the first one we'd seen in Australia in colour as well, because when Princess Anne got married, it was in black and white. Now it's, of course, in high-definition big screen. We've got Brett as well. This is going to be an amazing story, I think. Brett, good morning. Hello, Brett.
Good morning. Yes, it's Bruce, actually.
Oh, Bruce. Oh, my apologies. Bruce, let's go back in time, shall we? Where to?
I think it was 1948. Princess Elizabeth married Prince Philip of Greece.
Yes.
And now, we didn't see it live because in those days you didn't have such things as television. My parents trooped our six kids down to the Melbourne Cinema in Sackville in Sydney to see the newsreel a week afterwards to see the Queen of Princess Elizabeth and Prince Philip get married. The big highlight for us, I can't remember things about the wedding, but we were looking for my sister's fiancé who was over in England and who had shinned up a telegraph pole along the canal. So we watched that. But yeah, 1948.
Isn't that amazing? Bruce, thank you very much for that. So people have been watching royal weddings for a long time. In those days, can you believe it? You didn't see it live, of course. You had to go down a week later to the movies to watch it.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Now, what about this? This is a great story. Andrew is listening to us in New York City. He says, when Charles and Di were married, Australia bought them a silver dinner set. My uncle, Brian, from Lawn, which is a place in Victoria, was commissioned to craft the timber chest it was presented in. I love this little connection. I was four and remember watching it on TV. It was a huge day for Australia. What about, thanks very much, great story, Andrew. What about weddings, presents this time around, Lisa? What do we know about what people are giving or what they've given in the past?
Well, I know that this time around, Meghan and Harry have asked people to donate to a number of charities. They're both very humanitarian focused, and so they sent out a list, but I'm not completely sure what they're going to get. I've been hearing lots of random things, but I know that a lot of people in the U.S. are like stocking up on souvenirs and merchandise, like buying hand towels with their faces on it and buying mugs. And, you know, so I'm not entirely sure what they're going to be getting from us, but or from anybody, but I know that people in the U.S. are buying themselves presents.
That's nice of them. But it's different this time around because it's not the heir to the throne. Even though Prince Charles is the heir and Prince William will eventually become the heir to the throne, it's like Prince Andrew, it's like, you know, Harry. They're the spare, not the heir. And now Harry's bumped down to number six with the Prince Louis being born. So, you know, it's not all that big. It's not a state occasion. They're not having it in Westminster Abbey. What about Meghan? Do you think she'll be wearing white? What will she be wearing?
Oh, I think she's definitely going to be wearing white. I'm not entirely sure what designer, because every day we're hearing different things. I had heard that it was going to be this British group called Ralph and Russo, although I believe they're from Australia.
They are from Australia, yes, indeed.
Yeah, but they're based, I think, in the
in
UK.
England,
but
yeah.
Now I'm hearing that maybe it's going to be, some people are whispering about Stella McCartney. I really don't know. I feel like this is just my hypothesis, but I feel like maybe people are putting out kind of fake news, like, not fake news, like Trump.
Fake news?
Kind of,
what? Surely not.
Sorry, not... I don't mean like that, but I mean, you know, they're kind of like putting out these little rumors to kind of keep it a surprise for the big day. Because that's really like the only surprise that's left. You know, what is she going to wear and who's going to walk her down the aisle? Otherwise, we know everything else that's happening.
I think that's a pretty big surprise. I mean, it's always about what the dress will look like. That's the same with any wedding. It's not even just the royals. But generally, we know in advance who's going to walk her down the aisle. I was reading about Kate Middleton's father. He said that he just practiced and practiced and practiced for months, it seemed, and he was glad at the end of it, when it was all over, he could just go back onto his lawnmower and sort of mow the lawn, that he was glad the whole thing was over. And I can imagine he would think that every bloke or every, you know, set of eyeballs in the world watching it is watching him walking down the aisle. But of course, they're not watching him. They're watching the woman next to him.
Yeah, but if he did trip, then that would make every newspaper. It wouldn't be the big story, but it would be like just below the fold, you know. So, like, I mean, even look at Pippa Middleton, what happened with her. She was just wearing this beautiful, classic Alexander McQueen white dress as the bridesmaid for, or maid of honor for Kate Middleton. And all she did was simply carry Kate Middleton's train. And suddenly everyone's just talking about her butt. Because, like, even though all eyes are on the couple, the players on the outside are still going to get some attention.
It was worth looking at, let me just say that. Jenny is with us as well. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning. I started work in England the day before the royal wedding of Charles and Diana.
Wow.
And I've been there the month beforehand, so there was all the touristy things going on. And I remember all the pylons and everything erected so they could get the photos outside of
Buckingham Palace. Yep.
And you couldn't go into St. Paul's for about 3 or 4 weeks before the wedding. And on the day of the wedding, we had a public holiday because it was the heir to the throne. And one of the girls at work, she and her husband was the master at one of the Maidstone Grammar School. He invited all the nursing staff from the hospital I worked at that didn't have places to go. And we all went there and had a royal celebration and played croquet on the lawn. And
wow.
Even went swimming in the whole works at the time.
So you started work the day before.
That's right.
And then had a day off.
That's right.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good deal.
It was.
Jenny, how long did you stay there? Were you there?
I was there for 3.5 years.
Okay. All right. Jenny, thanks very much for that.
Thank you.
Jan has texted, wants to know about the honeymoon. What can you tell us about that, Lisa?
So what I'm hearing is that they're going to Namibia in Africa, which they've apparently selected because it's pretty isolated. And so it's basically so like they could actually have privacy.
Good
which
luck.
I can only imagine is what they want more than anything right now. They're about to have this huge public spectacle and all of Meghan's dirtiest laundry is being aired. And so I can only imagine that they just want to be alone. And I'm sure everyone's going to be trying to sneak into their resort, but it's quite isolated. So I think maybe we won't see any pictures.
So when Charles and Di were married, they, I think, went to one of his estates in Scotland on their honeymoon. It looked freezing cold, even though it was the middle of summer. And he was saying to her, okay, we'll just give them these photos, you know, there's great pictures of them there. And they ask, oh, you know, what do you think about marriage? And she says, yeah, highly recommend it. And then he said, oh, look, that's okay. They'll leave you alone after this if we just let them take some photos. They never did. So do you think that Harry and Meghan will be left alone? Because now there won't be a royal wedding maybe on this scale for another 25, 30 years maybe until Prince George gets married. It's all the speculations are going to be about a baby, isn't it?
Yeah. After this, it's just going to be focused on, you know, Meghan getting pregnant and having a kid. And I'm not sure if they'll get some time alone. I think, remember, Kate and William went to the Seychelles for their honeymoon, and I didn't see a single picture from that. So I think if you're a royal and you can spend enough money, maybe you can have a little bit of privacy. So maybe they'll have a little bit of alone time there. But I don't think the attention will go down. I think, you know, I'm not going to be writing about them every second of the day, but I'm still going to be covering them regularly. There's still going to be a lot of stuff that they're doing. And right after the wedding, I think just a couple of days after, they're going to a garden party. And then they're going on a trip to Australia, like an official trip to Australia. And then I think that's when the honeymoon will happen. Like the honeymoon's not happening right away.
I reckon they should do what most Australians do and just go to an island in Queensland for their honeymoon. What about a title? Now, this is something that the Queen will bestow on Harry on the wedding day. We saw it happen with William, who became Duke of Cambridge, which was a a title that had kind of been in abeyance, and no one had had that title for 100 years or something. What's going to happen with Harry, do you think? What are you hearing?
So I'm hearing Duke of Sussex. That's the most common one that people are saying. I've heard maybe also Duke of Windsor, but that is the title that went to the former King Edward, so I don't know if they really want to, like, associate it with that, because wouldn't it be kind of strange if, like, the man who left the monarchy to marry an American divorcee got this title, and then the next person that got it, you know.
Wouldn't that be brilliant? That'd be the Queen's little joke. I would love it if he became Duke of Windsor.
But I do think it's going to be Sussex.
So we've had Prince Edward became the Earl of Wessex, and now Harry's going to be... I mean, they just make these things up, don't they? I don't know. Has there ever been a Duke of Sussex? I have no idea.
I'm actually not sure if there's been one before, but that's just what, you know, historians are saying is the most likely pick. I think it's not been used in a while. I believe that's why.
I might just have a quick look and see what... I mean, that means she's going to be the Duchess of Sussex, you know. That's a mouthful. Yeah. Judy's with us. Morning, Judy.
Good morning.
Yes.
Earlier in your program, you were talking about Harry being a bit of Aladdin stuff.
Yeah.
Well, what about Harry's grandmother? Not the Queen, the other side. She was a bit of a tearaway.
Harry's grandmother?
Yeah.
The Spencer?
You can't even remember that he had one, other than the Queen.
Yes.
Well, she divorced and went over and lived in Brazil and so forth with a rancher or something or other.
Right.
Look, the young lad's who he is.
Yeah.
And this girl is who he is, who she is.
Yes.
And all this thing that, the Queen's got to divide it. No, she doesn't. She puts a suggestion forward. And the Parliament decide.
About what was that, sorry, Judy?
Whether he's going to be Sussex, Essex, Westminster or whatever.
Really?
Oh, yes. Huh. It's really annoying me, as you can tell.
I can tell. Why are you so annoyed about it, Judy?
Well, I wish they'd leave him alone.
Do you think that's going to happen, though?
Not if the Woman's Weekly knows about it. I can't understand the Woman's Weekly.
It comes out once a month, by the way, just in case. Little, we've got Woman's Day, which comes out once a week, and Woman's Weekly, which comes out once a month, and New Idea, which has no ideas. Alrighty, well, I guarantee it'll be they'll put out a special edition, and it'll be out by Monday or Tuesday, I'm sure. Okay, Judy, thank you. So, Prince Harry's mother was, a bit of a tearaway as well. I mean, she... even before they were divorced, and then afterwards, she wasn't faithful, she admitted that, and neither was his father. Why do people make such a big fuss about Harry's behaviour when... the front page of the biggest-selling tabloid in Australia today will have, you think the Markles are bad, you should see the Windsors, and detail the extraordinary lives of the Windsors.
I saw that, actually. That image was starting to go viral in the U.S. as well, of that cover. But, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they're people. Everyone has flaws. I may sound it, but I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. But it's just I guess my mistakes happen behind closed doors, and theirs happens on, the national stage or international stage.
But they also have, let's face it, you're not marrying the someone who might, if some terrible thing happened, became King of England. Jen is with us as well, and Jen has some pretty controversial comments to make, I think. No, it's Joan. Hello, Joan.
Yeah.
Good morning, Joan.
Good morning.
What would you like to say?
I would like to say I don't think Meghan is royal material.
Why is that?
Nothing to do with her past. I just don't think she has what royalty takes. I think actually she deserves an Oscar for her performance so far. And I must say I'm a monarchist, I'm not anti-monarchy. But if the Queen thinks she's had her annus horribilis,
Yeah.
She hasn't seen anything yet.
Why, what do you think is going to happen, Joan?
I think she'll be playing them for all she can. I think it's a very big act.
So you, what makes you think that, Joan? You have no evidence for that whatsoever, I'm guessing.
Well, I'm not guessing. I just watching her when they were at a remembrance ceremony.
Yeah.
And there was a band playing. Harry, and then she was giggling at that. She came out.
And when you say she's playing them for all they're worth, what do you think will happen?
I think once she gets a ring on her finger, I'll give it 10 years and one baby, and I think it'll all be over.
10 years and one baby.
Yeah.
Well, that's very much like Harry's mother and father, of course. It was 10 years and two babies. What do you make of what Joan was saying, Lisa? That's a very cynical view of it.
I mean, I don't agree with Joan, but I think everyone has the right to their own opinion. I think, you know, Meghan's pretty new to the royal scene, and she is an actress, that's true, but I think she's been handling this all with grace. I really like Kate Middleton, but the first few times you've heard her speak in interviews and speeches, she never was really comfortable. So I think Meghan is more comfortable in front of the camera, which comes not only from age, but also from experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, coming from that Hollywood background, I think she'll do a good job. I think that she has such a passion for humanitarian work. And I think it's going to be really nice to see that, because I think Kate cares a lot about the Heads Together on Mental Health Initiative and all of her patronages. And she's done some work, but she doesn't have like the on-the-ground field experience that Meghan has. So I think it will be good. But, I mean, I don't actually know either of them, so I can't say whether they're super in love or not. They seem in love to me. And for Meghan to put up with some of the negativity she's been putting up with, I mean, of course, to marry a prince, but still, it's quite unpleasant.
She must know
really be in it.
All the stuff that's gone on over the past, 40 years, really, since Di came on the scene. She would know all that. She would have to take that into account by saying yes or even having anything to do with him in the first place. Barry, good morning.
Good morning. How are we?
Fine. We don't have a lot of time. What would you like to say?
I'm just wondering if people thought how long before the next royal wedding will be, because I think, unfortunately, we've got quite a few funerals to look forward to over the next, let's say, 10 years.
Well, Prince Philip and the Queen, certainly. Absolutely, yeah. And what dare we say, Prince Charles as well. Look, there is another royal wedding later this year, which is Eugenie, I think it is. But beyond that, you know, Prince George, he's 25, 30 years away, isn't he, Lisa?
Yeah. I mean, we have Eugenie coming up, and then I assume Beatrice will have a wedding. And, you know, there's lots of other younger royals who are a bit older than George. But the fascination really seems to be on the children of Charles and Diana and their offspring. So yeah. I think we're not going to have another big one like this until George marries, if he decides to marry, or like perhaps Charlotte or Louis will marry before him. Like whenever one of these kids who are truly, truly children grow up and they decide to marry, then that's the next big one.
Now, your podcast has been in the lead up to this wedding. Is it going to continue afterwards?
Yes. I hope so. I think there's so much to talk about. Even before Harry met Meghan, I was regularly covering Kate, you know, what she was wearing, different appearances, her children. And so I think there's such a fascination with this family, and there's so much history to unpack and so many, you know, gossipy scandals, but then also just like actual stories to tell. So I think it will continue, and I guess it depends on if people keep listening.
The podcast is called Royally Obsessed. I really recommend it. And Lisa, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time this morning, and enjoy that wedding.
Yes, and thank you so much. It's been so interesting to hear about the wedding through an Australian perspective.